The ACN podcast is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners and sponsors, including the Agile Alliance. As a nonprofit membership organization, the Agile Alliance is an excellent resource to help you along your Agile journey. To learn more about the Agile Alliance and our other sponsors, as well as how you can become a sponsor or supporter of our show, please visit acnpodcast.org for more information. And thank you for your support. Good morning and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Agile Coaching Network. This is episode 77, which is amazing. If you think about the Agile Coaching Network itself, I think one of the most beautiful things that I can see about it is the community that's around it. And we get the opportunity to interact with the community. This is sharing information about getting the word out there about practices that we could use for Agile. I'm joined each month with a set of co-hosts, Shauna, Diana, Jorg, Sheila, Hendrik, and the other Sheila. We take a topic, we kick it off, we throw it around a little bit with the whole intent of having you join in as well. If you've ever missed an episode for whatever reason, all of them are up online. You can ask your favorite podcast system, whatever it might be, Spotify, you know, Apple, iHeartRadio, or even ask your connected device to play one of the episodes. If you do, the way that you can support the show, the best way is, you know, hit the like button, share it with your friends. I'm not sure if all your family members will enjoy it, but, you know, if you've got colleagues, please share that with them. With all the support we've been getting over the years of doing this, we hit again this year, which I'm proud to say. Anthony Monacero goes through and listens to all of the Agile podcasts, and he does a ranking process through it. And again, we became a part of the top podcasts for Agile, which one, I enjoyed reading the review of it. And two, again, I'm going to reemphasize that, you know, this is about the community more than it is about, you know, what we do from the hosting perspective. It's really about getting the conversations going and getting this wide. And so the success of this is all on the shoulders of the community, which I greatly appreciated. And thank you. How can you support the ACN? You can join our new online forum if you go to acnpodcast.org. You can, it's brand new. So, I mean, if you get there and you go, hey, there's no conversations going on here, that's because we just need to get it going. I set up the forum last month and I really want to get the conversation going throughout the month rather than just, you know, once a month itself. And that helps, you know, posting questions up there, other activities that you want to do, or if you just want to announce some things that's going on, like a conference or an event that you're speaking at, please go use the forum. It's here for the community. It's free. So you can just go up there and just add your body of work to that. You can also support us by becoming a supporter, sort of the NPR model, which is, you know, you can go to, again, the acnpodcast.org. There's a support button there. And there's different ways that you can do it. I'm not going to go through it here in the podcast, but, you know, go up there, go look at the site. You can buy us a coffee. I do appreciate everyone who's bought us a coffee. That helps to pay for the webinar costs and other things that we do in order to go support the coaching network itself. So to kick things off, I've been noticing a number of different things on LinkedIn that's talking about Agile being too heavy. And this one from Aaron, he posted up on there that for the last few days, he's been coming across CIOs and CTOs who've become anti-Agile because of the bureaucracy, the meetings, the handoffs, and et cetera. So they decided to abandon it and instead go a completely different direction. And he kind of tongue-in-cheek said that, well, now they're looking at cross-functional teams engaging directly with business partners to solve the problems. I think what, you know, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I hear this when I go into companies and I've been a part of companies where sometimes we get Agile out of balance and the methods and the processes that we recommend in order to go solve problems for companies and really increase the business value that we're trying to produce. Sometimes we, as coaches, we go a little bit too far. And, you know, there's a lot to go pick from within the whole community. I mean, if you go look at, you know, the different methods that are out there. I'm sharing right now a subway map of Agile practices that Deloitte published a while back. And if you look at all of the different practices that we could put on, we have to be careful. We have to be careful on what we choose. We don't want to overload teams. We definitely don't want to overload customers. And when does the process then get totally out of whack? There was a coach, if you've never had a chance to meet him, the late David Hussman. He published out, and he used to say this spiel on most of the events. He would talk about what he called Dude's Law. And Dude's Law is a very simple formula that he put together that looked at the what and the how, you know, the what we're trying to deliver and the how we're delivering it in this equation where what is divided by how is equal to value. His explanation of this was about how sometimes that people come up to him and say, hey, you're doing that process not all the way. You're not doing every single step that you should be. And what he was taking notice to was the fact that the tailoring that he might have done to, say, Kanban, or tailoring he might have done to Scrum or other things, was what was needed for that team in order for them to produce the value that they needed to. He might not have been practicing all of it, but he was structuring it, or, you know, sort of tailoring it as necessary in order for it to meet this equation that he came up with, which is don't overcomplicate the how, depending on what you're trying to go deliver. You know, put in just enough process in place in order for it to be balanced. So to kick the question off, I want to know whether or not, you know, within your space, how do you avoid being over-focused on the how and potentially piling up more how than the type of work that you're trying to go produce? If you are currently out of balance, how would you rebalance it? How would you, you know, and I've noted this in big companies in particular, we know how to go put processes in, but to get a process removed, a process that isn't working well, that sometimes becomes incredibly complicated to go remove that process if it isn't really working or serving the purpose of the, you know, the value we're trying to deliver. And then lastly, share a story about how you might have lost an adoption because it just, the process was just too big. People just got overwhelmed and said, hey, we're not going to go do this Agile thing anymore because this is just too heavy. So to kick this off, Diana, do you want to take us, you know, through the first part of this?
I'm probably not the right person to do that.
Okay.
Because I forever and always have been trying to under-focus on the how. When I work with organizations, it's like, what's the absolute minimum that we can do? I always think of the story that I don't know if Jerry Weinberg told it or if people tell it about Jerry Weinberg, about him working with an organization and they were just drowning in paperwork. And he told this whole group of managers, stop producing any of those reports. And if no one has asked for that report after 6 weeks, don't ever produce it again. And I think about, you know, the simplicity that I saw in the early XP teams and when we started talking about scaling, how let's get it good done well with one or two teams before we try to start taking in the whole organization. If we can't do it with a couple of teams, we're probably not going to be able to do it with every team in the organization all at once. And so my strategy is more avoiding being over focused on the how than And then I'm not in organizations for the long term. So if that turns out to be too much, I guess I'm not probably around to see it or need to rebalance it. But mostly what I see when I go in or organizations is, you know, they're a 150 person organization and they've decided to adopt SAFe or something, you know, which was really created for very large enterprises. And so there's something about a thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is the concept of one size fits all. And of course, it never does. And I mean, I'm living proof that one size doesn't fit all in clothing. And you know, every, you know, to get the best results, you need to tailor things. And tailoring very often means cutting away, not adding more, right? To make it, to make the fit really good, we usually are cutting things away. So, yeah, I have lost opportunities to work with organizations, you know, so in that sense, lost an adoption, mostly because I've refused to say, we're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at this and make it work, because I know that's not a path to success for me. And I don't often see it being a path to success for anybody else, but I can only speak for myself. So
I'll stop there. No, that's interesting, because one, you know, I'll take notice on one thing that you said. You were one of the right people to ask, because I think you gave a really good perspective on this. The other thing is that, you know, you use the example of, is anyone reading the report?
Right.
You know, is anyone using that? One strategy that I used to do is I used to put Easter eggs in it, you know, just different things that if you really read it, you would discover that I might have said something very scary in there, like, you know, 75 new high priority defects, showstopper defects, or something like that. And yeah, no one reading it.
Or only green M&Ms for the team.
Right. Exactly.
That's also a wonderful example. But yeah, I think that we as agile coaches, we fall in love. And, you know, we hear this great new thing and we say, well, let's do that too. And I, you know, I tend to work with smaller organizations. And so when I walk into a place and I see that they have a list of items in their JIRA in the 150 to 200, and on the list that on the view on their dashboard, all you see is, as an engineer, I want 150 times over and over again. It's like, okay, are you folks using JIRA to help you, or are you allowing JIRA to run how you do things? And, you know, it's some of those kinds of things. I mean, some of the tools that we adopt that we don't actually need for the particular thing we're trying to do. And so there's a lot of thought that needs to go into right sizing practices and tools and so on.
Gosh, I remember when JIRA was just a nice little defect tracking tool. I think it still is. Sheila McGrath.
I guess it can't. People tell me that it can be, but I rarely see that in the wild.
Yeah, I think sometimes they overfocus on the tools itself. Mm-hmm. Sheila McGrath, what do you have on this?
Pretty much in agreement with Diana. I think what happens a lot of times is they try to turn it into another version of waterfall. And waterfall in itself was never intended to be as formulaic as it became. I remember being in organizations where we created sort of a menu where we said, if it's a small project, you have to do these things. And it was a list that you kind of picked from the list which things made sense. And it's the same, obviously, with Agile, that whichever framework you're using, you want to only do the things that you really need to do. But I've been in a lot of organizations now where people say, well, what does the methodology say we need to do? And they go through the steps whether they make sense or not. And they wonder why that's creating a lot of overhead. And then they say it doesn't work. Well, if you're not applying it in a sane way, where you're using it to add value, then that if you didn't make the effort to go through the thought process to figure out what's relevant for this project now, then you're wasting a lot of energy. You're burning a lot of people's time in unnecessary meetings, potentially.
Go ahead, please.
And the other thing is, I've been in organizations where people would sit there because they had time scheduled for a ceremony and they had finished the ceremony, but there was still time left. So they say, and what else? which is sort of the antithesis of what Agile is supposed to be. But it's one of the ways that it commonly gets interpreted. So I think you have to kind of look at not just what makes sense in terms of the framework you're selecting for the organization, but what makes sense within that framework for the nature of the work that you're trying to accomplish. One other aspect is, even if you, I was just looking at the Agile Manifesto today, and one aspect is that it's very focused on IT. Then you get a tendency for it to be focused just on IT, but IT is always there to serve the business. So if you're not looking at what the business value is and aligning business and IT together, then it's not going to be agile.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. I mean, one aspect too, and I think Scott posted on the chat as we were going through this, which is, how do we start people off with the Agile Manifesto and the values, aid them in understanding what those things are first, then introduce whatever necessary frameworks or necessary, you know, things, but don't do it. Don't start with a framework. And I've seen Scrum classes where you don't even touch on the values and principles of Agile. They immediately dive into the framework. And I think we just need to avoid that. I'm kind of curious, in your approach, when you're going into an organization and you see some of that going on, how do you counsel them? How do you help them to back away from the line? I'm curious on that.
What I usually do, and this even predates the Agile Manifesto, what I've always done is just model that kind of behavior. As far as, like, we're in a meeting, it's been 5 minutes, but we've covered everything we need to cover, and just ask, is there anything else we really need to talk about? And then if the answer is no, I mean, ask it not quite that directly, but ask a couple of different ways to make sure people are speaking up. But then just say, okay, I guess we're done for today. And these are the takeaways. And this is what we'll cover when we reconvene.
And you're using your facilitation and your leadership in order to help people, give them permission, I guess. We don't have to take up the whole hour.
Model the kind of behavior. I mean, and another thing is, with really young teams, what I've wound up doing is, if there's extra time, I will actually keep people there and say, okay, we've got this problem we've got to deal with another department. Say we have to talk to infrastructure. And if there's a manager in there who is experienced doing that, I will just ask point blank, what would you do? So that then everybody else on the team can hear from them, what would you do? So that they get some ideas of what they could do without having to involve the manager. And so that they can take ownership.
Those are all good ideas. Jorg, what's your perspective on this?
Yeah, maybe a few experiences I had when I started up with Agile. This was really out of the team saying, we need to cope with our work. So the why was really clear cut, and it was discovering how to do it step by step. So that made me feel it is really easy. And then when I moved to the next team, situation was totally different. And I didn't really get it for a very long time, that they were in a totally different starting place. And that's, for me, important key. Before you do anything, understand where the people are and what their adjacent possibilities are. Where can they move? They can't move big steps across mountains in one go. That never works with people. People always change linearly. So forcing that back step will never work, regardless whether it's the why or the how. So understanding, listening, being curious is the first step. And I erred on both sides. I gave too much why to people who were so far away, they needed something to grab, to see, and to feel that something in their life was changing before they really cared for the how. So what I now try to do is to really combine it. Whenever I explain why, I try to give a hint how I've seen it done in the past, how it worked for others, why I believe it matters. If I'm explaining a how, I give a background. That's the idea I understand is behind this. If you have a better way to do it, don't get stuck with that way. And I try to get this into retrospective and things. So if people complain, I want to know what actually is it you expect if you are asking for a tool. And if you're saying we don't have the right mindset, actually, what kind of behavior would you expect to change this? So bringing this together and making it clear, because I've learned all my assumptions are always wrong. So I need people to tell me where they are to make the bigger difference and get them directed in their own words and their own language at their takeoff point. And then more often than not, they start to fly. And definitely about how to rebalance, especially if you're erring on having too much, how stop doing it. Pick the next possible point, like starting off a new project, starting of a new iteration, and say, let's intentionally cut everything that is not essential and start again. We will have retrospectives. We can bring it back, but maybe we can bring it back more intelligently. And normally, if you're doing too much how, you have a pressure of delivering, of finishing. So there is a good reason to say we are cutting this to be faster, to be more effective. And that, again, generates interest. So that's probably my two cents on this.
Sure. No, those are all great. Diana, Crystal asked the question. You had mentioned that you shy away from overkill of ceremonies and processes. What would you deem the foundation, though, that teams must have?
Well, for me, I think the very first thing is some kind of a chartering to get people started off on the right foot. And you only ever have to do that once. After that, you can, you know, you can adjust and readjust the charter that you've created. I mean, you create a draft and then you adjust that as you go along to help share the why and some of the how that you've thought about ahead of time. And then I think then it starts depending on the work that you're doing and how you're going to organize the work. I really like starting really simply. So if we could start as an ensemble where everybody's working on one thing at the same time, all together, then we can begin to think about what things would we like to pair on? What things should we work individually on? But keeping everybody all working on one thing all the time, all together, everywhere, everything, all at once, I guess, it is a way to keep people in sync to begin with. And when you have everybody working on everything all together all the time, you no longer need a stand-up meeting. That's for coordination when people are working separately. So you don't actually need a stand-up daily or however often if you are working together. And I like working in short, but I mean, one of the things about Agile that I keep going back to and I find more and more use for is working in small bites, working in thin slices of the work, working in short work chunks. So I love Pomodoros. And so I would introduce Pomodoros right away. We're going to work for 25 minutes together. We're going to stop. And then for 3 minutes, we're going to say, what did we like? What just happened? What stands out for us about what just happened? Is there anything about that we would like to change? Yeah, my water tipped over. I need to find a better way of keeping my water here by the table, whatever it is, right? And you say, okay, let's, you know, do we want to create a working agreement that says no food around the ensemble table? And we only, you know, we're only going to eat or drink during the breaks. Oh, okay. So then a 5-minute break, people get up, walk around, get some oxygen in there, you know, and then they come back. Then maybe every couple of weeks, I might have a longer retrospective. So as a kind of overarching umbrella of looking at how we've been working together, what do we notice? Not the tiny, tiny pieces of it. I also think that spending a little bit of time planning, if we're, I mean, it depends, you know, now we're ending up in the, it depends. Are we taking a Kanban approach where we're doing single piece throw, we're moving things through that way? We want to track our throughput and our cycle time, but we don't need to track a lot of other things. You know, then you set up one way of doing things. If you want to work in sprints and you think that's going to work better for the nature of the work, well, then we're going to need to plan the work that we're doing this 2 weeks or whatever the sprint is and get a sense of what our cadence is. How often can we, how often can we produce something? Are we, you know, slicing our stories small enough and that kind of thing? And then you begin to know, are we going to need a story time to kind of get things ready to be during this sprint, or are we not going to? Are we going to need a story time to size things that we are pulling into our Kanban flow so that they're, you know, we feel like they're more or less in the same size and single piece flow can kind of go that way without getting bogged down. But, and then, you know, I want a product person or a customer proxy or, you know, somebody who can really tell us the, what impact is this work we are having going to have on the people who are going to use what we're producing. And, you know, over time, that's become a much wider range of folks. And we used to just think about, you know, writing software for sale, and, you know, and now there's software for the infrastructure team and more IT kind of stuff. There's software that's going into hardware, and how do you represent that customer? You know, so you need to think through those things and figure out, you know, how close or far are you going to be from that customer in order to be able to ask questions as you're going along. And I think this is true. It's true of software for sure. But it's also true of all kinds of knowledge work. I mean, I'm hearing more and more about Agile in marketing and Agile in other kinds of agency work and, you know, Agile in HR. And you know, depending on where you're trying to apply this, you're going to have different needs. And I'm going to not go on and on about this, but that, you know, that's how I would begin to look at it. It's like, what's the work we're doing? What's the best work process for doing this work? Then, and, you know, what do our customers need? Is this a big need or a little need? And then we decide how many ceremonies we need, how many meetings we need, and what kind, and so on. I have to say, as the person co-author of the book Agile Retrospectives, it hurts my soul every time I see someone where they're having a retrospective at the end of every sprint or whatever their cadence is. And it's basically so that they can check a box that says we have to have a retrospective. And so they have the world's worst group process while saying that they're doing a retrospective and no actions ever come out of it. And it's such a waste of time. I don't want people wasting their time. I want people continuously improving. And so, I mean, don't do anything if it's not giving you value. And then if you're not getting value you need, figure out what will give you that and do that thing.
I think you found the title of your next book, Stop Wasting Time.
All right.
Yes. Sheila Eckhart?
Yeah, this is a great topic, I must say. So for me, for my entire career, regardless of Agile or any type of framework or process, I've always been very much like Diana here, almost like the process is minor, right? Because it's the what and why that you need to focus on. If you focus on the process, then you're measuring the wrong things. You're measuring how well you can use a process, and that doesn't really help anybody. But on the how, the thing with the how for me is not the process and tools as your how. The how has always been, what can we, you know, how do we use this process or these tools in order to enable us? These things are enablers, not the end all be all. So I think the focus on the how needs to be very individual. This is one of those, you know, individuals and interactions over process and tools, one of my favorite things to say in a coaching engagement, because there is a lot of focus on, are you using the process correctly? Are you using the tools correctly? And losing sight of, are you adding value? And I tend to rebalance with, how are we doing in the space of individuals and actions and interactions? How are we doing in collaboration and getting to where we want to go? How can we improve the way we're going about things? So I think that in focusing on the how, it's really refocusing the how, not getting rid of it, just focusing on something different. Not process and tools.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. Let's see, Scott, what do you have on this?
Well, I was just interested in people's reactions and discussions about the things I put into chat.
Yeah, I can talk about a little bit on the agile as a silver bullet and using the term agile, and how sometimes, unfortunately, the term has lost its meaning because of a lot of these things that you're talking about. So I agree with Scott that sometimes you have to put it in a different context and talk about ways of working instead of saying agile, because people look at agile sometimes in that negative manner. And then what they're really looking at in a negative manner is the process and the tools and not the true agility. And, you know, the quote you gave in the beginning, you know, the cross-functional teams and its ways of working, and just happens to be, you know, part of agile, but sometimes it's good to take that out of context.
Sure. I think I was just going to say that, you know, yes, that in certain cases, when you walk into a team and you say, hey, I think we should try some of these agile practices, then people shut down. And, you know, they just, you have to sometimes back people into, you know, let's try this one thing to see if this satisfies the business problem that we're trying to satisfy. But sometimes you don't use the same terms because the terms have become so corrupted. I don't know. I mean, do any of you think that part of this is to blame is that, and I'm thinking about an article right now of writing, but I know it's going to be just controversial as anything, about talking about how the certifications that are handed out today, how that when somebody finishes a, you know, a 2-day course and they're supposedly credentialed to do things, they don't have the practice behind them. They haven't been doing it for a while. I mean, is this part of the reason? Is this part of the problem?
Yes. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, possibly. But it's, you know, it's the expectations. I mean, it's a, what we have all learned that have been around for a while is the certificates and certifications aren't credentials. They are certificates, right? They say you've been through this workshop or you've been through this training, or, you know, now you're certified Scrum Master, whatever. And that's actually for HR, because recruiting and hiring is a really hard thing. And it's helpful to them to have some filters. And so if we set some expectations about, well, yes, I went through the class and I went back and I applied it as best I could. And I can, you know, I can certify that I did that, right? I was kind of interested in Scott's thing, in Scott's comment about the waterfall. And, you know, human's gonna human. He says here, waterfall, nobody ever used really classic waterfall, but might have faked it because they were expected to work in waterfall. And, you know, people are going to try to find the workarounds. People are going to game a system. People are, you know, all of those things. And so part of the thing that we are calling agile and the conversation that we're having today is how do we help people create work process systems that they don't have to game, that are simple enough for the complex problem that they're working on, and you know, so that we don't have to feel like liars at work. Oh yes, I wrote the report, but the report really didn't, you know, I reported it yellow. It's really red, but I reported yellow. I mean, you know, those kinds of things. It's like, how can we create work systems where people don't need to do that stuff? And it's, I mean, like you were saying, Ray, it's not about the word agile. It's just a handy kind of shorthand way of talking about a certain kind of work process that is supposed to be very flexible and versatile and only targeted at the things we really need to do. And adopting it as this laundry list of, well, we've got to do all this stuff. I mean, lately I've been participating in some big room plannings. Well, it's an organization that's big enough that people can't talk to each other every day. And so it's a really good idea to get together on a quarterly basis and sort of share what's been going on and make sure everybody's up to speed on how everything is happening. That's a really useful expenditure of time. And then we do some, you know, and then the teams get a chance now because of remote work, teams get a chance to see each other face to face maybe. And they, you know, can kind of restore their team feeling. And that's a good thing. And then they can go off and do what they need to do again. So it's finding what is giving the value, what is giving the value for creating the kind of work we need to get or need to do, and what is giving us value that we can give to our customers so that they will give us something that we value back. That's really what we're doing, but it's a really long way when you can just say agile.
So. Yeah, I think it used to be, wasn't it the lightweight methods conference?
Oh yeah, they were lightweight methods for quite a while.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the
and signers, they were unhappy with being lumped together.
Yeah, they didn't want to become. Lightweight. I mean, what are you talking about?
No family. Does anybody in the family, any of the siblings, like to be referred to as the kids?
The kids
would like to be seen as individuals.
Well, one of my lines in most events that I go to is that, you know, especially when I see agilists fighting with one another, which is especially because most of the conferences are with people who are brand new to it. And I see like people with, you know, lots of experience arguing with one another. And I always tell them, don't fight in front of the kids, please.
Right.
So, you know, kind of pulling back, some others had some question, had some comments on the certification portion of that. Does anyone want to just dive in and go for it?
Maybe two thoughts. I don't think the certifications in themselves are the biggest problem. One problem is that actually practicing is not automatically valued, while certifications sometimes feel like they bring a value. And in some regions and some companies, they are prerequisite for hiring. And that's bad because that gives people the feeling I've accomplished something with that certification. Well, actually, most of the time, it should be a starting point for learning. So I had the benefit to do it early. So for me, it was a starting point for a journey and highly valuable to have the feeling there are others who have formulated something that I can't put in words. And now I have the words to do it and I can build on this. So that was really good. But nowadays I've met people who say, I'm actually a lean coach, but I know agile. I've done a safe training. And they don't even understand that agile is not a method at all. And so they think I've seen one method, so now I'm agile. And if this is then parallel to companies as that's what you need, and then you are agile and you need to be agile, actually don't need to achieve any goal, just be agile. This doesn't work. And then it kicks back because they don't even know what they're throwing overboard when they say we're no longer agile. Mm-hmm. Like in the post you started with, they're actually, it stands, we're not calling it agile because the word is polluted. Mm-hmm. We're now doing it again. So be my guest.
Thank you for that. Jade, how about you? What do you have?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I do have a question in reference to the certificate because I recently just got my the project management certificate and then my Scrum Master. I don't have much experience actually as a project manager working in a position, but I've had the opportunity to play some of the roles. And is that going to be, do you see that that would be a challenge for me actually getting into the role of either a Scrum Master or just getting into that field? Because I guess I was just trying to see where should I start.
Well, I think what Diana was saying, you know, if you look at the HR systems, most will, if you're going in for an entry-level position as a Scrum Master or an experienced Scrum Master position, you know, that's sort of the first checkmark box that the HR systems do to have you taken that course. Mm-hmm. My best advice is that shadow people that are doing that work. It sounds like you've done a little bit of that work already, and just start to gain that experience. I'll give you an example that, you know, I work for a nonprofit organization, and that organization benefited by having some of the agile practices used. And so I'm not getting paid for it because I'm just a board member for that, but we're able though to exercise my skills. I'm able to do that. Look for every opportunity you can to just practice. And again, for joining like calls like this and networking with others, you could definitely find people who would be willing. This is one thing about our community that I love, is that there's a lot of people out there willing to just say, hey, yeah, come on in. You know, well, we want you to help out, you know.
Absolutely. Thank you. That was some really good insight. And I'm definitely open to, even if it's something that it's not like me getting paid, just shadowing and just kind of gaining an experience, because I think this is I love the whole movement. So thank you for that.
No problem. And our form system is brand new that we have up on the, if you go to ACN podcast.org, but you're welcome to go just post on there that you want an opportunity like that. And right now, just I'm putting the disclaimer, it's brand new. So you might be posting it and you're going, hey, where's everybody? But it'll eventually take up and build steam. So definitely go put a post there.
Let's also suggest that Jade connect with wherever is her local user group or group. They're everywhere. Okay. And it's so good to, you know, connect with people that are in your own time zone, at least, or whatever, you know, that you can talk mm-hmm. to a lot, even if you can't get together in person. It's okay. And a lot more of them are starting to get together in person again. So,
yeah, that's beautiful. And the great thing about them, most of them are still also keeping a virtual component. So if you ever want to go just sample how, say, the Austin group acts and behaves, or the people in, you know, Agile PDX over here in Portland where we're at, you know, you have your choices now. You don't have to actually be close, you know, in certain cases, because some of them are keeping the virtual component. There was a question that came up on here too, that my organization is not comfortable with Agile, perhaps no roadmap for Agile transformation, but person wants to have some experience with Scrum and they want to utilize it. Any advice or strategies for when you have a team that's uncomfortable, how to approach them and how to bring them, start them on their journey?
Is it the team that's uncomfortable or the company? Because I have done this before. the company just wasn't like, oh, we're going to do an agile transformation. But some of the teams really wanted to use a Scrum process to help them in what they were doing. They thought it was better than their current way of working. And we just implemented it for that team.
Yeah. I've done something similar. You know, I believe in coalitions of the willing, you know, and you don't need to have everyone in your team want to go do it. But if you have three or four people who want to go and work in a particular way, you know, this is what, you know, I've done with like paired programming. It, does anyone want to pair with me? You know, and lo and behold, there are a couple people that did want to go do that. So I was able to work with the people who want to work with it. And then there's something contagious about when something works. I find that it starts to spread around the workplace. I was surprised when we started doing Kanban boards, how then suddenly you would walk along the aisleways and go, there's another Kanban board there. Somebody must have learned that, which is cool.
I've also done it in organizations where the people thought they didn't like Agile. I don't know what they'd seen that they thought was Agile, but they were sure they didn't like it. So you just don't mention that it's Agile. You just say, hey, what if we do? Does that sound like something we could try? And with whatever it is that you're thinking of doing. At one point, I had a place where I put up a Kanban board that was about 6 foot by 9 foot. They loved it. Somebody from another department walked over and said, hey, you've got a Kanban board. And I went, no, it just happens to look exactly like one. Shh. But they loved it. They just didn't think they liked Agile. I mean, at some point it will register, but you don't have to shove it down their throats. You don't have to use, if they're scared of the terminology, then use different terminology. Ask them what they feel like. They describe what you want or what the concept is. And let them pick the words. And then later on, you can always introduce the words. Because the other thing I've run into in organizations is that you have somebody that went and got their certification, but they're looking everything up in the book. Management goes and says, oh, I understand what this is, and renames all the meetings and all the and retitles everybody without giving them any real training. And because they've changed the names of the meetings, they think they're doing Agile. The content isn't, and the mindset isn't, but because they're using the right nomenclature, they think that's all there is to it. And then they say it doesn't work.
I've had this, I worked for this one vice president one time that used the word epic like water. You know, let's write an epic for that. And, you know, and I think there's a lot of, you know, agile practice that's out there today that, yes, if I use the word, and I think, you know, sort of the cargo cult mentality of that, maybe somebody will, you know, leave me alone. I think that was somebody mentioned earlier, I think it was you, Diana, that said, you know, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to lie about something. You know, I'm going to lie about this. So that's kind of part of it. I mean, any other last advice of getting somebody just getting started? Go ahead.
Maybe circling back to the beginning, talk about the why. Don't talk about the what. Talk about why you want to do this. You want to empower the team. You want to get the team closer to the customer. You want to get a consistent quality out of the team, which they can be proud of. And then you can check actually what we are doing. Is that adding to the why? So are we doing the right thing? And then there you are. It doesn't matter what it's called, but you actually can prove that you fought before what's going to come out of it. And that is a very important process, not following what somebody else says, but thinking first.
Yeah. No, thank you for that. That's good. Hey, Glenn, this is the last comment for the show. What do you have on this?
Yeah, thanks. I really wanted to take this last part just one little step farther, because in my organization, a very large global organization where my team of 11 agile coaches, I lead the team of agile coaches, are being told, well, we don't want to use that word anymore. Agile is burned. We don't want to use it. So to what Diane was saying as well, I'm hearing like we've been on this journey for 12 years. Now they don't want to use it at all. How would you approach that?
I mean, has anyone told you what the alternative is?
No, I like that you asked it, but no, we've been even saying, okay, well, what do you want? And they're like, well, just don't call it Agile.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the most common lines that I throw out as a coach is probably that statement I just made, which is, okay, so what's the alternative? And let's talk about it. You know, just to say we don't want to do that, well, what are we going to return to? No process, no methodologies. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one approach that you can take. Scott, you put your hand up. Did you have something on that?
Well, I just want to point to the news of one large banking organization that decided, well, we've been doing this a long time and we now know how to do it. And so they basically, I believe, were laying off all their coaches and trainers and said, yeah, we're going to embed this in our organizations now. And we don't need the help anymore. And I know a little bit about this organization. I know some people who were there and they clearly still need help. But they've decided that this is an excuse to downsize people because of, you know, issues going on in the industry. I heard Accenture was going to plan to lay off 19,000 people recently. So companies are dumping people. And they need a reason for it.
Well, I think this gets into, you know, if you win the Super Bowl, do you need your coaches anymore? Do you fire all your coaches? Clearly, the team knows how to play football. So therefore, we don't need coaches any longer. You never see that happening. Everyone, we are at the top of the hour. I want to really appreciate everyone's contribution today, this lively conversation. I knew that as soon as we got into kind of the certification space, we were going to get some people like fired up a little bit. So that was not intentional, but it was good for us to go down and really kind of explore this topic a little bit. I have a couple of announcements. We are going to be holding the Business Agility Lab for 2023. We're going to have it at two places this year. So we've had it traditionally at the Big Agile Conference. We're actually the Agile Testing Days event in Chicago on May 22nd and 24th. We'll be hosting us for the Business Agility Lab. Just for anyone who doesn't know this, this is where it's really we get in depth and talking about companies and organizations and how can we actually bring together both the concepts of what we do in software into the business side, and how do we do that in an effective way. So the event's going to be taking place, like I said, in May at the Agile Testing Days. And then we're also going to have an event in Portland, Oregon, which will be a standalone event on October 26th and 27th. And so some of our co-hosts here at the Agile Coaching Network will be some of the facilitators there. Please go take a look at it. We would love to have you in person. And so we can talk about some of these things that we've talked about on the ACN all the time. So I look forward to hopefully seeing you all there. Our next live event is on April 28th. And with that, I would just like to say to everyone, I hope that you have a tremendous month. The ACN podcast is for educational and informative use only. If you'd like to know more about the ACN community, please come up to acnpodcast.org and support our show.